Hello, and welcome to Open Finance, the podcast that believes the future of financial services is open and brought to you by Finastra. I'm your host, Emily Nicole, Technology Editor at City AM. And today we're joined by Coriolis Technologies CEO, economist and author, Dr. Rebecca Harding, and Finastra CEO, Simon Paris. In this episode, we'll be discussing whether fintech can close the trade finance gap. So first off, Rebecca, what do we mean when we talk about the trade finance gap, and why should fintech companies be looking at ways to close it?
So there's an estimate of the trade finance gap, which is roughly $1.5 trillion globally. And we need to be concerned about that, because what it means is that SMEs across the world, but particularly in emerging economies, are less able to access the finance that they need in order to be able to trade. Now, it's an imprecise number, and we're not completely sure that it's the absolute number. But what it is making quite apparent to us is the fact that there is a gap between what very small businesses and smaller businesses need and what they're actually getting from the banking sector. Now, the reason why tech companies, and particularly fintech companies, can look at this seriously is because they have technologies and they have mechanisms for being able to connect that are actually far more appropriate to SME finance needs and can be done more fluidly and in a more secure way. So it's an opportunity for that sector.
And Simon, in your role as Finastra head honcho, I mean, do you want to elaborate on that a little bit more?
Head honcho, that's a new phrase for me on a Monday morning. So picking up on a word that Rebecca used, which is connect, and you think about what fintechs can do in that role of connecting, and a big part of that's going to be around transparency and risk, I would say. So, for example, if you are trading in palm olive oil, then the transparency could be provided to say, hey, you know what, that palm oil came from either a farm that did slash and burn practices or a farm that came from sustainable practices. That's a very useful level of transparency to be able to have. Or, for example, the diamonds that you're trading in is not a blood diamond, it's responsibly sourced, right? So that's a kind of transparency in the connection of trade finance that would be very useful. Likewise, as you think about the access to money, to finance itself, then we can leverage technology to try and make the people who provide capital, provide finance, much more visible to those, particularly the smaller entities, as Rebecca was saying, that need it. And that's an example, again, of connectivity through technology that fintechs can work on.
And why is this gap so hard to define? I mean, we know it's approximately 1.5 trillion, but we're not too sure on the exact size.
Yeah, so this is, I'll jump in and then Rebecca, please come over the top as well. So you can think about a trade financing gap in many ways. One is just there's $1.5 trillion missing for trade finance. And that's one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is the cost of trade finance. So if you're a small company and you look at the typical cost of an average transaction, it can be around $25,000. So anything that can be done to reduce the cost or the friction of trade and make it more seamless would also be very healthy. So there's a cost of doing business that can be reduced. There's a lack of finance that can be addressed. And there's just the transparency. I mean, a great example would be cashew nuts. If I'm a cashew nut farmer, I don't necessarily know what's being paid at market for my cashew nuts. And again, if I can make that available or more transparent, then you can also promote things like free trade or open trade or fair trade. And these are all concepts within this notion of the trade financing gap.
Rebecca, is there anything you'd like to add there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the big challenge, and you talked about why we find this gap difficult to understand completely. And that 1.5 trillion, by the way, is a number that's stuck around for quite a while. So it's been fairly stable. But the challenge for banks in this market, and I think this goes to Simon's point about risk, is not what they know about what's going on, because they know how corporates are behaving. They know the global trade flows. They know what's happening. It's what they don't know. And for a very large bank, their risk is actually to find out exactly how much a small company might need, where the risks are, what the opportunities are, how much needs financing. And the costs of doing all of that are as high as they are for a big corporate. And therefore, for a bank to do all of that, it's actually very expensive to get an SME properly financed. And so they don't do it. So I think, as Simon was saying, it's about understanding where technology can actually move more quickly to reduce those costs and actually turn those risks into opportunities, if you like.
And those risks and costs that you mentioned, are they impacting the gap in any way that makes it bigger? Are they just making it harder to quantify?
Well, they make it harder to quantify, but they're also making it more difficult for banks in particular to go into this market. So the role of the fintech is actually very important here. Because as I said, for a bank, because the more we get concerned about know your client or anti-money laundering, the more we get concerned about, as Simon was talking about, the examples of cashew nuts or the examples of particular types of palm oil, we don't know 2-3 tiers down in the supply chain exactly what's happening. So it makes it very hard to price that market. And what that means is we don't know exactly what the risks are. We don't know exactly what the costs are. And being an economist, I would say this, wouldn't I? But it means that there isn't a market there at the moment. So there isn't an SME finance market there that's properly structured. And that's a huge opportunity for the tech market to come in on.
And Simon, how are you guys at Finastra handling that problem?
Yeah, so it's Finastra and an ecosystem of partners, and also what Rebecca and I do as part of being on the World Trade Board together. So if you think about what Rebecca just described, which is risk is priced, right? So the barrier to entry, the lack of this transparency and some of these attributes that Rebecca's been describing, it creates a barrier to entry which is increasingly high or relatively high, in particular for the SMEs around the world. So what can Finastra and the ecosystem and the World Trade Board all together do? Different examples. One of our World Trade Board members, as an example, is the chairman of GLIFE. And GLIFE have what they refer to as the Legal Entity Identifier, which is now being put out over several million companies, and people can rely on that legal entity identifier so you know whom you're working with. So that's something that we try to propagate and encourage the adoption of. It would be good for everyone. Likewise, as you think about the things that Rebecca was describing around KYC or Know Your Customer or AML, anti-money laundering, those aspects can be brought up to a higher multilateral level so that people can rely on each other's KYC and AML. Specifically for Finastra, what we do is we actually work on the trade finance software, and that covers things like bank guarantees and letters of credit and supply chain finance. And what we try and do, by the nature of what you said at the beginning, the future of finance is open. We try and open up those systems to allow the world's innovators to access what's in them, which is data sets and workflows and business processes. What does that mean? That means we can see a future through the partnership Collaborate to Innovate with fintechs, whereby you can start eliminating things like documentation. So if you use ocular character recognition or natural language processing, you can start to scan documents and automate the process and reduce costs, reduce that barrier to entry that Rebecca was referring to.
And a lot of those things you just mentioned, like the legal trust issues and all of that, sounds like they're using a lot of the more emerging technologies of today, things like artificial intelligence and blockchain. And Rebecca, have you seen a lot of these things being used in your experience of the trade finance sector?
Absolutely. And I think there are two principal technologies that are sort of overarching technologies that are going on at the moment, if you like. One is the big move towards blockchain. And the reason why that's important is because it helps us make more secure, in a way, these particular types of transactions. So you have, like Finastra has a platform as a service system, and that can help create security between the different things that happen on it. But the other thing that's very important is artificial intelligence. And I think the role of big data and the role of artificial intelligence is actually one of the big movements and the big momentum things that's beginning to drive, as Simon said, in terms of the World Trade Board being able to identify legally the companies around the world and then being able to do checks is one thing. But what's also important is that artificial intelligence actually has the capability to plug the gaps that we don't know about. So right at the beginning, I said that it's not about what we know, it's about what we don't know. We don't know the risks associated with SME finance. We don't know necessarily even the size of the market. And what artificial intelligence does is it allows us to use mirroring processes, predictive analytical tools to be able to plug those gaps. And that's extremely exciting.
Yeah, I can only concur with what Rebecca says. So the ability to leverage AI or augmented intelligence, because you can take the artificial intelligence, but you can also augment it with other data sets. Like, I know the price of my cashews, but wouldn't it be great to know the price of all cashews? That would create huge transparency and huge fairness in the system. So yeah, completely concur.
And so building on that then, do we think it's possible that the trade finance gap could be closing or even just getting a little bit smaller anytime soon? We're doing all this great work.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a perpetual optimist, so I would hope that the trade financing gap can be addressed. However, being also a realist, unfortunately, the current context of politics in particular is not that favorable to trade. In fact, the last 5-7 years have seen the lowest level of trade finance growth in recorded times. Normally, trade finance grows at kind of 1.5 to 2 times the rate of GDP. Right now, it is less than GDP these last 5 to 7 years. And that's highly unfortunate because it means that through less trade, you keep more people in poverty for longer. So I think a couple of things have to change. One is we have to get back to believing that trade is good. You know, Roberto Azevedo said, trade is good, more trade is better. And we need to get back to believing that trade finance is on all of our interest to encourage. Otherwise, we will force people into poverty, and that will create migration flows, and that will create social unrest and all of the things that we're currently seeing that feed populism to a degree. So it's got to begin with a little bit of a political doctrine that trade finance is good. And then secondly, to where Rebecca was going, you know, trade requires trust. The more that technology can enable and encourage trust, the more likely it will be to grow again.
And Rebecca, how do you think regulation can play a part in closing the trade finance gap?
I think regulation is important, but it has to be smart regulation. So I think regulation for the sake of regulation is something that potentially is holding back the sector at the moment. So there is a huge amount of regulation because there hasn't been that type of trust in the sector. And, you know, that type of trust has actually been disappearing since probably 2012, when we first saw big fines against the banks. And, you know, that started to undermine some of the trust in what was going on. I think what's happened since then is that compliance has stepped in. It's started to create almost an over-regulated system where it's very difficult to provide money on a cost-effective basis, particularly to the SMEs in the sector. And it's actually kind of over-regulated. Now, that's not to say we don't need to have supply chain transparency. We do. But what's important is that we make that regulation smart. I mean, for example, if we're looking at sustainability, and I know this is very close to Simon's heart, but if we're looking at sustainability as an issue now, we have to bring in measures within the global trading system, and SMEs and fintechs are very well placed to do this. We have to bring in mechanisms that allow trade to become more sustainable. But the only way of doing that is to play the regulatory system against a self-driven process of becoming more sustainable as well. And that has to be done in an intelligent way because the issues of climate change are too big to ignore.
So it's a unified effort then, it seems. Well, OK, so today we discussed how a lack of data is perpetuating the trade finance gap and potentially hurting SMEs the most, but how fintechs and banks can be the ones to work together with governments and regulators to solve that problem. Thanks to Rebecca and Simon for joining us today, and thank you to our listeners. To find out more or to find out other podcasts, you can visit us at finastra.com, and you can join in the conversation with the hashtag #OpenFinance on Twitter and at @FinastraFS.